Thank you for visiting Metabolism 123, the podcast originating from the website metabolism.com. Metabolism, the bodily process of making and utilizing energy, affects every aspect of your physical well-being. When metabolism malfunctions, the results are common afflictions such as diabetes, thyroid disorders, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or simply being overweight. The host of Metabolism 123, Dr. Gary Pepper, an endocrinologist with 40 years of experience, along with invited guest experts, provide practical insights and knowledge you can use to improve energy, weight, or any troublesome aspects of your metabolic life. Thanks again for choosing Metabolism 123 and Metabolism.com as your information source.
Welcome to my podcast, Metabolism 123. I'm Dr. Gary Pepper. Yes, that makes me Dr. Pepper, but of the MD variety and not affiliated with the bottling company. As a matter of fact, in today's kickoff to Metabolism 123, I'll be introducing you to yet another Dr. Pepper, who is my brother, Robert. I've been a practicing endocrinologist for 40 years, presently located in Jupiter, Florida, and I am an associate professor affiliated at the medical school in Miami. Endocrinologists specialize in diseases like diabetes, thyroid, obesity, and anything to do with metabolism. The goal of the show is to bring in experts who will help me delve into a variety of common metabolic conditions, such as obesity, diabetes, thyroid disease, so that we can clarify some of the mysteries and misunderstandings that are widespread. The viewpoints are solely those of the participants and do not represent medical care, guidelines, or the opinions of any of the institutions of which we are affiliate. To kick off this brand new podcast program, I'm very pleased to include my brother, Dr. Robert Pepper, who has a PhD, a CSW, and certificate in group psychotherapy. He has been a practicing psychotherapist for 30 to 40 years, and he specializes in group therapy. He's authored 2 books and has been an invited speaker to numerous professional organizations. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Robert Pepper. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Good to be here, Guy. Glad to help out.
First off, I wanted to set the parameters for our discussion to acknowledge that the word obesity can trigger a lot of emotions in people. Do you use the word obesity in your groups, or how do you address this sensitive issue without jangling people's nerves?
Overweight.
So you just say overweight?
Mm-hmm.
How do people in the group address obesity? Do they use that word, or how do they get around that?
That's a good question. They'll use it in reference to other people, but not to themselves. Like they'll say, my wife is obese, but if they too are obese, they'll say, I'm fat.
Mm-hmm.
Actually.
So they'll use the word fat. Okay. So
yeah.
I guess that's kind of a pejorative for themselves.
Yes, it is. Uh-huh. It's a self-put down. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Once you get over the use of the right word, what is generally your next step in the session when you're talking to somebody who has trouble with their weight?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on my relationship with them, because obviously if this is someone I don't know very well, I'll ask them to tell me their history with weight, family history, and ultimately I'm leading to finding out what they're getting out of the situation just the way it is. Although I won't say that to someone I don't know, but I will say that to someone I've been seeing for a while, who's been complaining that they're not losing weight, and they've tried various diets. And my assumption is related to the second book that I wrote. The title is Some People Don't Want What They Say They Want.
Right.
And while people consciously may want to have less weight, my assumption is that they're getting something out of the way it is, even though it may not be conscious. I make a distinguish between conscious and unconscious desires as part of my theory about human behavior.
So what would be a conscious reason?
A conscious reason might be that they, if they're able to talk about it, that they use food as a way of comforting themselves when they're anxious. That they realize that we can live without alcohol and drugs, but you can't live without food. And some people has been demonstrated in the last year. During the pandemic, people have turned to food as a way of soothing their jangled nerves over the way life has been throwing us a curveball.
Particularly, I guess people are interested in like this quarantine 15 phenomenon. Do you encounter that a lot?
I do. And in fact, what's more typical with people that I've talked to is that it's a quarantine 30. They gain even more than 15, which is really shocking.
Are these people who like never had a problem with their weight before, or this sort of repeat offenders?
Combination of the two, yeah.
What is it? Is it like going back to their childhood and remembering that mommy baked cookies or something like that?
That's another very good question. Often I find that problems with weight run in families, that it's unusual where just one person, the one I'm speaking to, has had a problem with weight. Either people are from families that have used food. Sometimes I describe them as depressed families, the depressed couples, the depressed families, in addition to depressed individuals. Human beings are by nature dependent, and some people have used food as a way of soothing themselves. But there are obviously people who turn to alcohol, others to drugs. And
right.
I don't know if I would use the word mimic, but they identify with the parent and choose the same methods of comforting themselves as the parent has. It's more than just mimicking. It's an emotional attachment.
So like even if a person says, I don't want to be like my parent, they somehow can't help it?
I know it sounds strange, but yes, that's right. Consciously, they don't want to. My parents were obese. My parents were fat. I don't want to be like that. And yet they also tend to abuse food.
So like it gets into their brain without them even realizing it?
I don't know where if it goes into the brain, but it becomes a pattern of behavior that either develops over time or emerges under times of crisis. It goes into their emotional makeup, their personality.
So it's a personality trait.
But I also think that there probably is research that suggests that it does have some kind of neurological connection, that some of this information does get stored in the part of the brain that deals with memory and past history.
Right. There's a lot of issues in endocrinology where some people are more sensitive to certain kind of stimuli, hormones. Some people can tell if their thyroid levels change just a little, and some people can't tell at all. Even if there's big changes, they feel the same. So I wonder when it comes to like stimulation from something like food, where you have people who get a lot more bang out of a piece of chocolate than another person. So like they develop a different kind of relationship with food. I mean, it seems from my perspective that genetics has a good part to do with whether a person's going to get heavy and how they store the fat in their bodies. But I also think that from what I'm understanding what you're saying, that maybe there are people who develop a different kind of attachment, whether it's because of growing up, but maybe they just have a genetic disposition to liking food and using food.
I'm sure. It's multidimensional. Human beings are complicated. There's never just one reason why anybody does anything. Right. So I'm sure that's the case. I think age has something to do with it personally. When I was a younger man, I could eat anything and I would never gain weight. But in my mid-30s, I found that even the same food that I was eating, I was putting on the pounds. I had to go on a diet and realize that perhaps metabolism changes over time. Is that something you've observed, that people's metabolism?
Yeah, I mean, it's been documented that as we get older, our body is less efficient at burning up stored energy. Stored energy is fat.
Calories?
Yeah, calories. So that is definitely an issue. And I think another issue that I guess is a big psychological one is that people don't want to see that their body's changing and that they have to change their behavior. Several times a day, I will have somebody tell me that as they got older, they got heavier. And you can see it in their medical history, 5 pounds every year, but they're still trying the same things that they did when they were younger. By the way, you have an unusual metabolism. I want to point out that you can eat more than just about anybody else at the table generally.
And
still get away with it.
Well, I don't know if that's a compliment or an insult, but it's catching up with me.
Yeah.
It does definitely. It reminds me of, I forget which law of physics, which one of Newton's laws it is, but an object in motion tends to stay in motion unless acted upon by an outside force. When people have a pattern of behavior, they tend to maintain that behavior, even if it's stressful for them. Mm-hmm. And they make a choice, whether it's conscious or not, that change is always stressful. So if they have to change, there's a lot of resistance to it. And in my work with people, I try to respect people's resistance to change because it really is based on whether they're motivated enough to do it. And I have no way of controlling that. So it's a very humbling experience that you know what people have to do in order to lose weight. And yet you also know that unless the person is motivated enough, they won't do it.
Right. From my perspective, that's really interesting because they come to me and they'll say, I need to lose this weight. And they seem really obsessed with the idea, well, I've got to lose 5 pounds or 10 pounds, whatever their goal is. And that something really bad would happen if they don't. And there's an expectation that I feel it when they're saying that, what can I do for them? Can I give them a thyroid pill? Or what kind of pill can I give them? And this is kind of a day-to-day issue. And I think for most people in medical practice, the kind of medical practice I do, that it's got to be exhausting because, just as you said, you sort of realize that so much of it has to come from them, and yet they're putting it on, in this case, me. Mm-hmm. And if I tell them, well, got to cut back on your carbs and your calories, and you have to do some exercise, you could just about see the eyeballs roll. Doc, that's not what I came here for. I know all that.
It reminds me of a cartoon I recently saw in a New Yorker magazine where a guy is lying on the couch in his therapist's office and he sits up and he turns around and he says to the psychiatrist, he says, Doc, I think it's about time we upped my medication. He says, I still have feelings.
Oh, yeah, right.
People want a simple solution to a complicated problem. Give me a pill. Give me a pill that I can take. And it puts the onus on you. And really, it's unfortunate that you make a living out of trying to help people, but they can't expect you to do what needs to be done. And sometimes it's a matter of education, like, but not always. For example, someone I know is telling me that they were wealthy enough to have someone do their cooking for them. And one day, this person saw the cook frying whatever it was, chicken, and the family was trying to lose weight, so the person said, well, frying, but put her on her pounds. So can you stop using so much oil and bake the chicken? And the person said, of course. And then the next day, baking chicken, my patient noticed that they were cooking or baking with a lot of oil. And so they really didn't understand the connection between what they were doing and how that may be affecting people's weight. So,
yeah, that's true. Well, we have, for example, a nutritionist in our office, and she is sort of the first stop for people with diabetes when they have to change their dietary habits. Mm-hmm. And it's great to have that kind of resource, but for example, insurance won't pay for nutrition unless you have diabetes. So it's a catch-22 because if people are gaining weight, they're at increased risk of diabetes, but they can't get the education to help them prevent it. So even the medical field is stacked against people who may have a sincere desire to lose weight. So Rob, I want to kind of cut things off here because attention span, we talked about people, is somewhere we're approaching, and I don't want to burn people out, but sounds to me like we have a lot more ground to cover. So I would like to try to get you back soon so we can do another one of these sessions.
It'll be my pleasure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, people can see your Facebook page, right? Under
My website is drpepperphd.com. drpepperphd.com.
Oh, okay. That's where you would prefer people if they want to try to find out about. And you have a practice in Queens, but you do online over the phone sessions too?
I do. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So if people
all the contact information is there.
On your website.
on the website, huh?
So what is it again?
drpepperphd.com.
Thanks again for listening to our podcast, Metabolism 123. We hope you found the information provided useful. Remember to visit our website, metabolism.com, for downloads of this show, to leave feedback, and to browse other valuable information about metabolic health. None of the comments made by Dr. Gary Pepper or his guests on the show are meant as medical advice or treatment and are for educational purposes only. Please consult your own physician for any concerns you have about treatment or diagnosis of medical disorders. Thanks again for listening, and have a rewarding day.